am the daughter of Tim and Donna Eller. Most of you know them. If you don't, then just pretend you do. I am very proud to be a part of that family. You may see things up here that remind you of my father. As I have been practicing, I have seen my father in me. And I think that's a good thing. I've had the privilege of being under their guidance, under their teaching, and definitely under their prayers all of my life. And I am blessed to have had that start, to have been given the faith as a young child, and it has grown with me. I know the faith that I have is because of them. It was passed on to them from their parents, and I hope and pray that we are passing it down as well to our children. So Mom asked me a couple of months ago if I wanted to speak to a group of women at her church. My answer was really no. But before I could even say no, I could already feel deep down inside of me something was just saying yes, just shouting up from my spirit, yes, say yes. And I really wish that the other part of me would have been louder, but the spirit inside of me was prompting me to say yes. I know that God put this opportunity in front of me for myself. I actually learned a lot in the last few weeks preparing for this. But I know that this is really His story. This is to glorify Him. The events in my life were used to glorify Him, and I can't not share that. I could have said no to my mom, but I could not have said no to this opportunity from God. A few things I want you to hear from me today is that my story is about hope. Throughout everything that I have been through, there has always been hope. It is hard to not have hope in situations. I don't know how you could do it without that. Hope is something that resides in our minds, and it makes things possible if you believe in a living God. Anything can be possible if you believe in that living God. So you cannot give up. You can't quit. You can't hear the bad news and just decide to give up, because there was always hope that things would be better, that things would be different, that tomorrow when I wake up, the news they gave me yesterday may not be true today. And that hope never failed me. I want you to hear that I have faith in a Father who loves me, faith in a God that I was taught about as a young child, and that I continued to learn about, and I strengthened my faith because of the struggles in my life. He said He would meet all my needs, and He has. I know that He has gone before me, and He knows the events before I even get there. So I can have faith in Him that He's going to give me what I need. So I know you're all dying to hear, so we'll start. It's 2005. I was 29 years old. Do you remember when you were 29 years old? My daughter, Alyssa, was almost 2 years old, and I am pregnant with our second child and our son, Noah. Everything in that pregnancy was normal. I didn't have any concerns. We had ultrasound done. He was kicking. He was moving. Everything was as it should be. We planned the room. We got everything ready to bring home our son. One evening, at about 40 weeks, I went into labor at Saltgrass Steakhouse. Chicken fried steak was not the best thing on the menu to order that night, but that is what my dinner was. And I quickly went from that Texas-sized steak to delivering a baby. I labored through the night. My family was there. They went home. But I continued to labor through the night. And then the next few hours in the morning is when everything began to change. 9:01 in the morning will be stamped on my heart forever. 9:01, May the 3rd, is when my son Noah was born. Just like with Alyssa, when she was born, I had family and some friends outside of the door that day, and they were just listening. They wanted to be in that room, but they were listening at the door, waiting to hear the cries of Noah, just to celebrate with us, to know that he was born. But instead of the cries of Noah that day, if they had been listening, they would have heard the cries of a desperate mother. You see, when Noah was born, he was not crying. In fact, he wasn't breathing. And I could tell very quickly, looking at my doctor, that something was wrong. Nobody said anything, but he rushed to the head of my bed, picked up the phone, and he called for the neonatologist that was in the hospital that morning. The nurses and everybody quickly took Noah. I never saw him. They took him to a bed at the other end of my room and began looking at him and trying to help him to figure out what was going on. And nobody was paying attention to me, the mother. All eyes and all attention was now on Noah. I'm in the bed. I can't get up. I can't do anything but to holler at him. And I remember distinctly saying, "Noah, Noah, I'm here. I'm your mom. I'm here." Thinking that he just needed to hear me. But that was not what he needed that morning. He needed a lot more than just the sound of my voice. And God knew long before I did what was going to happen on May the 3rd that morning. Those events weren't a surprise to God. He was prepared to meet my every need that morning because he had already been there, and he knew what I would need. We were shocked. We were unaware. We were unprepared, but God was not. I want you to hear me say, I don't think that God caused Noah's situation. There are moments where when you're dealing with this, that you're saying, how did he not cause this? Or how did he not, why did he not prevent it? But I don't think he caused it. I know it happened because we live in this world. It's fallen, it's sin-ridden, it's disease-ridden. There's sickness and death in the world that we live in, and that is why Noah was in the situation that he was. I do believe that God worked through the situation. He saw the bad, and he turned it into good. So Noah is born. Let's jump a few days into his life, and I'll tell you a few things that were going on. We had been moved to Texas Children's Hospital. He was breathing on his own. They originally had him on a CPAP machine that was helping him breathe. But a day or so later, he was breathing on his own. He had a very labored breathing, though. You could see his chest just rise and fall. He did not have a gag reflex, so Noah could not keep his airways clear. He did not have a suck reflex, so he could not eat. He was fed with a tube. He didn't move. He didn't open his eyes. He didn't cry. He had very little tone in his muscles. And we didn't know what was wrong with him. They tested him, and they were searching, and we were just waiting to see what they were going to come up with. So all of these things were wrong with Noah, but when you looked at him, he was beautiful. He is beautiful. That one picture with his little green hat on is the only single picture I own of my son, where he is not connected to something. And that is the smallest rinky-dink picture that I can't even print it bigger than this. And that's all I have of him. But he was beautiful. He had brown hair. We don't know where he got that from, and we were surprised, and I knew he was special the day that I saw his brown hair. I remember looking at you through the window, he has brown hair. Look at his brown hair. But he was beautiful. Fingers, toes, features. He was perfectly formed on the outside, and I would look at him over his bed and just ask, what is wrong with him, Lord? He's beautiful on the outside. What is wrong on the inside? And it took a few days before we learned what was really wrong with Noah. We had an MRI done that revealed that he had severe brain damage. There was an acute event in the womb, a phrase that I have said many times in my life, where he was without oxygen. The latter part of my pregnancy, we don't know why or when, but it was most likely, days before he was born. Where he was without oxygen. And those moments or minutes is all it took to change the course of our lives forever. I remember the day that we heard that news, because leading up to that, we were hopeful, and we saw changes in Noah, and we just knew he was getting better, and he was getting better. But it was a blow to us to hear that he had brain damage, because that's not something you come back from. It was just one of those moments where we're sitting with the doctor and the air just leaves your body. You can't breathe. when that reality has been presented to you. The doctors gave him very little chance of recovering. Before that, they didn't offer too much positive or negative. They just would tell me the facts, and I kept, you know, probing. Well, is he or did he? And they won't tell you anything, but they would tell you when something like this comes and there was little hope. They were sure to tell me that. Isaiah 58:9 says, "Then you will call on the Lord and the Lord will answer you. You will cry out for help and he will say, 'Here I am.'" Jeremiah 33:3 says, "Call to me and I will answer you." That's really all we had, was to just cry out to God. We were surrounded with family and friends in a waiting room that day. We took up the entire waiting room at Texas Children's Hospital, making a huge prayer circle. If anybody had walked in that day, they would have wondered what was going on. But we were just crying out to God, asking him for healing for Noah's situation. And we were watching and hopeful that he would get better. Even though we had had this bad news, we were hopeful that things would start to change. And we began to see little signs in Noah that gave us more hope. He would arch his back when people were watching him. And that was huge for us, for a baby that did not move, to see him move his muscles. He began to make a little bit of gurgling noises. I remember tickling his feet, trying to get him to move, and he began to curl his toes up. And all of those signs just fed into our desire, you know, that he was going to get better. I remember just praying that the wires in his brain would just reconnect. You know, you created him, Lord. Just fix him. I mean, it's just a few little, you know, sensors, nerves. I don't know what's in the brain, but reconnect that and make him whole again. Because it was all about me. I wanted my son. I didn't want it the way that God had planned, and I wanted it the way that I had planned. And it's a hard lesson to learn when your ways don't match up with his ways. So on May the 11th, I got a phone call from a nurse telling us that things had changed with Noah. He had been stable, doing a little bit better, but very stable the day before. But now he had an infection. He had he was not able to get the oxygen in his body the way he needed. He had a fever. Just a lot of signs were pointing to the fact that something was wrong. I quickly got to the hospital, rushed to his bedside. Remember, just his nails were blue. It's the first thing I saw, and I knew that something was wrong. I was able to just love on him for just moments before the nurses came in, and they began. They rushed me out of the room. They did not want me in because they had to put an IV into his head. They had to shave his brown hair, I remember. And he went onto a ventilator very quickly. Turns out that he had double pneumonia. And he was on a fast track downhill, I mean, within hours. Which ironically was, not ironically, I should never use that word when I'm speaking of God, but that was our prayer. I don't want my son to live in this condition for the rest of his life. That was our prayer that morning, my husband and I, that when the time came, that it was done quickly. All decisions were made for us so that we were not, you know, under the stress of having to decide this for Noah. And that's exactly the way that God did it. So he was put onto a ventilator, and we were able to make that decision with a neuro team that Noah was in a non-reversible state, is what they called it. So he would not change. Nothing they did was going to bring him out of that state, and we had the right as his parents to decide what to do. Well, we made the decision to take him off of the ventilator. So they unhooked everything. They handed him to my husband, and we were led down this hall to a family room. And it was in that moment that that Noah looked up at his dad for the very first time and opened his eyes at Ethan. I never had the privilege of seeing my son's eyes open, but his daddy did. And it was just Noah looking up at him saying, "It's okay. I'm okay. This is the way it is." He closed his eyes. We walked into that room, and we just loved on him for about an hour. Ethan and I were sitting next to each other, and we passed him back and forth because we didn't want to, you know, not let the other one have the time, and he just went back and forth. We told him about his great-grandparents that were in heaven, the crazy things that they do, and that they would just be waiting for him with open arms. We sang songs to him, and that's when that last picture was taken. The first time I had ever seen his full, beautiful face was in that room. And then we watched him as he took his last breath. Definitely the hardest thing that I have ever done in my life. And I don't stand here to tell you this sad story or to make all of you cry. I tell you this to follow it with, there was a God who was with me this whole time. There was a God who went before me and knew all of the events, but yet he stood presently beside me, hurting with me, knowing every detail. He was watching, and ultimately he is my God who rescued me. When our cries of "heal Noah" did not turn out the way we wanted, we didn't give up. We then turned our cries to "give us peace, give us the strength to do what we need to do." Somehow, we buried our son, got into a car, and drove away. That was the hardest thing that I had to do, was to drive away from that cemetery. I needed the strength to be able to do the impossible. And God answered me in that. During my grief, I had to choose joy. I had a 2-year-old daughter at home. I didn't have the luxury of staying in bed all day long. There were days where I did. There are days where, you know, I was rocked to the core that I was angry. I didn't want to see another pregnant lady. I didn't want to see a baby. I couldn't go to a baby shower. I was angry. I was mad. But I had to choose, do I stay in that situation and let the anger and the bitterness eat me, or do I choose to trust God? Psalm 71:20 says, "Though you have made me see troubles, you will restore my life again. From the depths of the earth, you will bring me up and comfort me once again." So definitely we saw troubles, but definitely God restored my life. We made it through this grieving process. And by trusting in God, about a year later, we were pregnant with our third child. And it is only through the peace that God can give you that I made it through that pregnancy. That was emotional-ridden, just worrisome. Is this baby going to turn out just like Noah? And I had peace throughout this pregnancy that we were going to be okay. When the time came for her to be born, just like Alyssa, just like Noah, we had people outside those doors waiting and listening. And all we needed was that little cry from that baby to know that everything was okay. And the moment that Megan was born and I heard her cry, a piece of that, the hole that was in my heart, just a piece of that hole was just patched. God took that precious new baby, and she does not replace Noah. I don't even have to tell you that. But she patched that longing and that desire that I had in my heart. And we felt, praise God, and we felt restored. We felt whole again. A short year later, we took these two precious little girls, snatched them right out of their grandparents' hands, and moved to Nashville, Tennessee. We found ourselves just in another area of transition. We were in a new place. We had no family. We had one friend in the entire city. We had no home church, which I tell you was is a tough thing to do. If you have been a part of a church your whole life, to move somewhere and not have that support, not have just a place where you're comfortable to go to, and that was probably one of the biggest adjustments as we moved. But we found a place, we found friends, we began to feel at home in Tennessee, and then we welcomed number four, little Audrey. Something goes wrong with the genetics when you have that many kids. And she's just a little fireball, but we love her. She is our little Tennessee baby. And you know, when she was born, you can guess who was at the door. This time it was my dad, because I had finally given in and my mom was in the room that day. Because I know just what a blessing it is to see your grandchildren born. At that point, I didn't care anymore, and I, come on in. So my mom got to be there for the birth of Audrey. And again, though we had hope and we were fairly certain everything would be fine, you still have those anxieties. So when Audrey was born, it was another blessing from God. And that's a pretty good story. I would like to stop it right there. I would, really. But it goes on. We were restored. Life was good. We had three kids. We were settled in Nashville, Tennessee. And more came. James 1 says, "Consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." And you have to let that perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Well, apparently my perseverance needed to finish its work. And the testing that we had been through with Noah definitely strengthened my faith. I had a faith in God that was just undeniable. I didn't always know why he did what he did or how he did what he did, but I trust him. I trust him to lead me and guide me, and that he would give me what I needed whenever things came my way. And that served me well as we moved forward here. In 2010, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. At a routine exam, my doctor found a lump, and we moved on from there, testing and so forth. And we cried out to God again and prayed that what was found was not cancerous, but it was. We went into surgery to remove the cancer, just praying that the tumor was not as big as they thought it was. Let it be smaller. It was double the size that they had originally thought. And then, of course, we cried out that the cancer had not spread. They did lymph node testing, and we just prayed, "Lord, don't let it be in the lymph nodes." Guess what? It was in the lymph nodes. I was 34 years old. This is a cancer that usually affects like 60-year-old women. My husband would joke that he was married to a 60-year-old when he had to tell people. I was 34. I was the mother of three young daughters, which, what are the odds of having three girls that I can now pass this on to? With a very aggressive, nasty cancer is what my doctor called it, stage 2 breast cancer. Again, all of the prayers that we offered up to God, they were not answered in the way that we wanted. Again, I have seen God do miracles with other babies. I have seen babies in situations like Noah's, and those babies come home and live. I have seen and heard stories of people with cancer where the cancer just disappears the next time they go to the doctor. It's gone. Or it shrinks considerably. But that was not what God had planned for my life. So we were thrown into this time of treatment. I had three surgeries. I had 4 months of chemotherapy. And I had 6 weeks of daily radiation. And I'll be honest with you, I really thought that I was going to be the first woman in history whose hair never fell out from chemo. I had hope, right? You can't fail with hope. And I prayed. I know these drugs, they make other people's hair fall out, but Lord, don't make mine fall out. What a story that would be, right? But those drugs are designed to kill every cell in your body, and that's what they do. So my hair fell out, and that was not a fun situation. It was just another point in life where it's not about you. You have to just look beyond that. You have to push through the treatments that you have to do, knowing that it's trying to make you better, and it's a part of your life. There was a moment where I one morning was asking, you know, just why is all of this going on? You know, why do I have this diagnosis in front of me? And I just remember praying to God and telling him that whatever he had to do to glorify his name, that I would do it. I don't know where that came from or why I even, you know, gave myself that window, but I prayed for that, and God, I think God took that and ran. But I know that he has been glorified through all of these situations. And through cancer, I had the three girls at home. I definitely had days where I was weak and I was tired and I was in bed, but for the most part, I had to get up and I had to continue on with life. And I think that was good. I think that it's good when you don't have that chance to you know, have a pity party, and you can't lay in bed. You have to get up and keep moving. And every morning it was just a choice. I have to be strong. I have to be strong for my kids. And I pushed through it. And with God's goodness, we made it through. We were in Tennessee, so we did not have family around. They came to visit. Lots of people came to visit. But I had friends and neighbors that took care of me, that made meals, that took care of my kids. We had a fundraiser, which I don't know if you've ever had a fundraiser in your name, but it was kind of an awkward thing. But we had a fundraiser. It was called Fight for Julie, and we raised $12,000in one evening to pay for medical expenses. Throughout all of my experiences, God has just sprinkled blessings. There were always blessings. There were always signs that he was right there with me, that he knew my needs, and my needs were financial at one point, and he met those needs. I hope that you can hear from my story that hope prevailed. The hope changed. It changed from healing Noah to now healing me. It changed from let's not have cancer to now I have cancer. You know, help me do this. I never stopped believing that he was in control. I always knew that I was in his hands, no matter what happened, and that was enough for me. Psalm 50:15 says, "Call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you will honor me." Some of the translations will say, "I will rescue you again," and that's the one I like. But so the last few weeks, as I'm preparing for this, the end of this scripture here, "you will honor me," that's the part that I learned. I hope that this story has been beneficial to you in some way, but even if it's not, it was for me as well. Because I learned firsthand how I honored God through all of this. I had wondered, you know, why did we do this? Okay, I saw some results from Noah. We saw, you know, just lots of people who had heard our story and had given me feedback. You know, you helped encourage me. Your faith is so strong. You know, you brought me back to prayer. I saw some of that with Noah, but I still would question, you know, why did we have to do all of this? And I learned it's so that I could honor him. I was not rescued in the way that we had prayed, or the way that my mom and dad or my husband had prayed, but I was rescued in the way that God had to have it happen. It needed to happen his way. And I was rescued. I am not in that pit of sorrow right now. Absolutely, I miss Noah. Absolutely, I wish I knew what he looked like approaching his 8th birthday. But I am not daily grieving for that loss right now. And I stand in front of you a 3-year cancer survivor. Arguably healthier than I have probably ever been in my life. Feel great. And pray daily that the cancer is behind us. But he has rescued me from the sorrows in my life. And in turn, just like the scripture says, I honored him. God allowed me to reach a point in my life where I was so low that I had to call on to him. I had no other choice but to call on to him. And I had a blog set up for Noah and Through Cancer where there were, I mean, hundreds, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of people from all over the country who heard our story, who read the blog, and they were watching what we were doing. And because I would call onto him, because I trusted in him, God was able to demonstrate through my life the difference that he can make in his children's lives. He wants to bless us. He doesn't want to hurt us, but when we hurt, he will bless us. And I think if things had been different with Noah, if Noah had been healed, even if that cancer had come back and not been something that I had to do treatment for, the people that were following, the people that heard my story, would not have had that opportunity to see God work in my life. And that's an interesting thing to think about, that you were put through these trials and these struggles, maybe had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with the way other people saw God working in my life. I didn't actively choose to honor him. I didn't wake up and go, "Ooh, the scripture says I need to honor God. How do I do that?" I think looking back, it was a natural response for me. For a God who had loved me and blessed me and forgiven me, my natural response was to give him praise and was to continue to trust him through all of it. I simply brought him glory by trusting in him. So no matter what has come my way in my life, the job, we've had a loss of a job, the cancer, Noah, I simply just choose to keep trusting him, and I will honor God by doing that. I know that he loves me. I know that he has plans for my life. Not my plans, but that he has plans. And they're not to harm me, they're not to hurt me, but they are to give me hope and to give me a future. And that's what I cling to. What I can't understand, God can. What I can't do, God can. When I can't even see something as possible, God can. And when I simply can't, he will. How great is our God that he does that for us? I have learned that he can be trusted, that he will provide, and that we only have to just let him do that.